Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Morning. What a big crowd. This is a talk partly to follow Jukai, which we had last week. So we hear a lot about effort in our practice, discipline, rigor, consistency. I was given the old saying, get your butt on the cushion. Old Chinese saying. But what is effort? That's partly what I want to talk about today. We use effort in a couple of ways. One is that it's one of the paramitas, virya, which means zeal, diligence, vitality, energy. But it's also part of the Eightfold Path. We say right effort. And everything on the Eightfold Path is based in right view and right understanding of emptiness, of interdependence, of intrinsic Buddha nature, and so on. So, with that understanding, your effort gets your butt on the cushion, or chanting, or to class, or to reading sutras, or to whatever keeps you going on the path. And that you do it all, not only for yourself, but for all beings. That's the right understanding of right effort. And that second kind of effort can keep you going when virya fades, when the excited, passionate energy fades. Just discipline will keep you going. So, right effort is kind of whatever keeps you going. And sometimes that means reaching down for more in yourself. Pushing through obstacles, and sometimes it means rest or play or solitude or something like that. You have to explore a little bit about what the best effort is for you right now. But how far does your own effort get you? We encounter the message all the time in various ways that this is on you. Get yourself to the zendo, get on the cushion. Success or failure is going to depend on your effort. If you don't want to put the effort in, you're not going to get there. And it's not unusual for people to practice heartily for a year or so and then fade away. We see a lot of people leave after a year, and another sort of group of people will leave after about 4 or 5 years. And I think for some people, it means they got what they needed. They got the medicine for their illness. They got what they needed and they can take it with them. But for a number of people, I think it's when virya has really faded and right effort is really hard. You're not a beginner anymore. The honeymoon is over. Sometimes the honeymoon is way over and you're really disappointed or disillusioned. And effort is really hard. And except for a few glimpses, the goal, whatever it is that got you in the door, seems very far away. And then you have teachers telling you, oh, it takes lifetimes, be patient. It's pretty easy to give up at some points, right? So effort gets you started, but it can't keep you here forever. There's a point where we can't make the effort anymore. And that's an interesting phrase. You make the effort. You create this effort. And there's a point where you just can't. You have to let yourself be helped by something greater. So we actually have terms for this. What a surprise. Zen has terms. Tariki is other power. And it's used mostly in Pure Land practices, and most specifically in Jodo Shinshu practice, where their primary practice is calling on Amitabha, who is the Buddha of infinite light and compassion. And the primary practice is reciting the Nembutsu, which is his name, Namu Amida Butsu, reciting it over and over and over with sincerity, with heart. And by doing that, the practitioner finds liberation and rebirth in the Pure Land. There's also a school, the Nichiren school, that teaches that the way to liberation is to recite the title of the Lotus Sutra, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, reciting that over and over, but done with complete devotion. They believe it allows you to awaken Buddhahood in an instant. And then we have this term, Jiriki, which means self-power. It's not the same G as my name, by the way. Jiriki is often used pejoratively. It means the effort to reach enlightenment through your own effort. And one of the ways we do that is devoting ourselves to a Zazen practice. From a Pure Land point of view, it implies self-centered practice, a sort of delusion of self-centeredness. So in common usage, you'll hear Jiriki Tariki used to denigrate Zen practice and promote Pure Land practice. And maybe from where you're sitting today, you got your butt on the cushion today, that's great. It sounds kooky to think that just reciting something over and over is somehow going to get you to paradise. But I can tell you that from the Shin point of view, it seems really crazy to think you can do it by yourself, by just sitting still. Now, sitting Zazen regularly requires effort and discipline, and you're the only one that can do that for yourself. Pure Land practice requires this unshakable faith and devotion, but Pure Land practice requires a lot of discipline. How the heck do you just keep reciting over and over with deep devotion if you don't have some discipline? And sticking with Zazen through dry times requires a lot of faith and trust. I can tell you, if it was up to Jiriki, I wouldn't be here today. I hurt my hip and I'm having trouble walking without pain, and I would like to be in bed. But Tariki got me out of bed, got me here. Jiriki can be really selfish. It is focused on the self. Tariki from outside somehow can lift you up. So I hope it's obvious that this common comparison, Jiriki Tariki, is really shallow. And it's very disrespectful of both Zen and Pure Land practice, because it doesn't see either of them very well. Comparing is irrelevant. Comparing gets us in a lot of trouble. So Jiriki Tariki is, Kyogen used to say it was both ends of the tunnel. You went in one way and you came out the other. D.T. Suzuki said, you might say that both are Jiriki and both are Tariki. They're not really two things. And when I think about the Buddha, he needed both. He used both. He did this very difficult practice of 6 years of ascetic sitting alone in the forest. And when he finally sits under the Bodhi tree, he vows not to move until he finds his liberation. And it gets really difficult. He's assailed by doubt and temptation and fear. And he reaches down to the earth. This always brings tears to my eyes. He calls on the earth to be his witness, to be his protector, to be his defense. So if you see a Buddha with their hand like this, it's called the Earth Witness Buddha. So even the Buddha needed help, right? We all reach a point where we need help. All we can say is help. We simply can't do it by ourselves anymore. You get lost, you're broken, you're confused, you're assailed by doubt and temptation. And you just have to give up. It seems to be a basic human need to know something bigger than this self. I look at Theravadan Buddhism, traditional forest Buddhism, really rigorous, disciplined, rule-bound, and often solitary practice. It looks like completely jiriki. But they have a tradition called Buddha Nusati, which means recollection of the Buddha. And in one of the sutras, it says, if you think of me, this is the Buddha speaking, if you think of me, any fear, terror, or standing of hair on end that may arise in you will pass away. So these very disciplined monks recollect the Buddha, and this other power rushes in and frees them. Completely tariki. One of our great ancestors, Keizan, fascinating person to study. He created the liturgy very much as we chant it today, devoted to Zazen. But he completely believed in spirits, mystical practices, ghosts. He believed in the presence of the ancestors with us here and now. He had quite a liminal point of view, one foot in each. He believed in prophetic dreams. He built his monastery where a dream told him to. But he also did amazingly rigorous meditation practice. And right here in this sendo, which is devoted to self-practice, to Zazen, we ask for other power to show up all the time. We don't even think that we're doing it, but if you do metta practice, may all beings be well. How does that work? If you recite bodhisattva vows, I vow to save all beings, how the heck do you do that, right? We have an echo that we just heard. Whenever these devoted invocations are sent for, they are perceived and subtly answered. Answered by what? We say these things, we don't even realize that we're calling on other power. All the time. So how does this follow Jukai? Giving and receiving of the precepts. The first thing we do in Jukai is confession. The first thing we do is acknowledge our imperfection and take responsibility for our actions. Even when we see that our delusions and our struggles are really old, inherited conditions, and we are tired of them and ready to be done with them, we confess them, acknowledge it. The next thing we do is we take refuge. In what? We take refuge in what? We take refuge in each other. We take refuge in the truth and in a teacher. But really, we are taking refuge in something we can barely, faintly sense. Something far beyond the self. We're saying, help. But it's only through our disciplined effort that we can do that, that we can choose to take refuge. Now, the ceremonies of Jukai are partly a distillation of this relationship of self and other power, and I can't describe most of those ceremonies. They're kept completely private until they're performed. But a lot of people in this room have been through them, so hopefully you can follow this point. When we study the precepts, we're forced to encounter a pretty difficult truth, which is that we can't keep the precepts. We inevitably fail. The precepts are sometimes described as the natural activity of a Buddha. I'm not a Buddha. I'm mostly an imperfect human being, pretty karma conditioned. I fail the precepts on a regular basis. But here we are saying over and over and over, I will keep these precepts. I will, I will, I will. How do I do that? So the ceremonies of Jukai and the actual act of giving and receiving the precepts are really a deep acknowledgement of this shared nature. We are flawed and we are perfect. We are humans and we are Buddhas. We do this through our own hard effort, and we do this through our surrender to something greater, to an other power. Most people know this saying, why are practice and enlightenment differentiated? Right? That's saying the same thing. Self-power, the discipline of showing up in spite of circumstances, in spite of the struggle, in spite of psychic, physical weariness, just showing up That's practice. And it will in time open up to this other power. And the realization of where is this other power? Is other power not self? Does that mean not self? Is other outside the self? No. It's right here. It's within us. It's our true nature. Disciplined Zazen will allow you to touch a spacious, compassionate space. Touch something wise and free and clear. And there's a third term for this. Jōriki. Jōriki means mind power or samadhi power. And traditionally, it manifests as a continuous presence of mind and the ability to access wise action in all circumstances. It's used in a lot of ways of saying that you become able to meet each circumstance with the best skillful means. You can break karmic obstructions. You can break through ego defensiveness. Jōriki is dynamic and immediate. And it's said that a person who has access to Jōriki lives freely, undisturbed. Now, the caveat is that's a pretty seductive thing to go for. And it's a very seductive thing to touch. It can be misunderstood. It can be misused. That's kind of a talk for another time. But mostly we touch it briefly. We don't sit in order to cultivate that power. That's the seductiveness. Just comes of itself. So probably most people here are familiar with a quote from Dogen: to study the way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by the myriad things. Very nice distillation of Jōriki and Tariki. You study the self and something happens and the other things, the myriad things, just pour into us. But Dogen also wrote a fascicle called Dōtoku, which means sayings or expressing the truth. And by expression, he has a very large concept of expressing. He means the universe expressing itself. Total exertion, total continuous exertion and existence of all things. The universe expressing itself, always happening. In that fascicle, he says, this intention to arrive is itself real manifestation. And so right in the moment of getting free, there is expression of the truth, which is realized without expectation. It is beyond the power of the mind and beyond the power of the body. So this intention to arrive, that's self-power. We come in the door because we want something. We need something. We intend to get there. And real manifestation without expectation, that's other power. You can't make it happen. You can't grab it. It's kind of a short talk today. I just want to end with self-power and other power are like a Mobius strip, one of my favorite things, because we're always somewhere on this endless circle. We roll from one side to the other, one side to the other. There's only one side. One manifests, the other manifests. We need Tariki to get our butts on the cushion. We think we've come in the door just for ourselves, just through our own effort, but something is helping. Just sitting down is a manifestation of other power. And whenever we experience liberation on any level, when we have an opening or a spaciousness of any kind, it is Jōriki that got us there. It is our effort that got us there. So we're never really alone. In that fascicle, Dogen says this: the black dragon's pearl is tirelessly guarded by the black dragon. but it rolls naturally into the hand of a person who knows how to take it.
For those of us in the Zendo, if you have a question, please raise your hand. I'll bring you the microphone. Please state your name and hold the microphone close to your mouth. For those on Zoom, if you have a question, you can either type the question into the chat and Kate, our co-host, will read it aloud, or you can type your name into the chat and Kate will unmute you so you can ask it.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. Thank you for your talk. I was really interested in this, this idea Tariqi just really, you know, is in my head, and this definition of it as other kind of power, right? Because I feel like I resonated with that description a lot. Like I had a loss recently and the Buddha was like such a powerful image in like my process with that. And lately, like my practice feels like very close to me. I can't really explain it. It's like, it doesn't feel much for me to be there. And just what's in, I would love if you could speak more, because that doesn't feel like other. Yeah.
Right. It's not other. I'm not sure why the terms developed that way, but you know, some of that is from the Shin point of view. But there are times when that other power is just you. You're accessing something that's already there in you, and that often is a little dormant or out of sight. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Going back to the metaphor of the Buddha touching the earth, and the earth is my witness. Can you say a little bit more about what witnessing is about?
Oh. Well, I start to cry whenever I think of the earth witness. The earth is everything. It's everybody. It's the universe seeing you. It's being seen and being recognized in that effort, I think. There are times in our practice when that's really what we need more than anything, is to be seen and recognized in our effort. When just somebody reaching out their hand and saying hello can make all the difference. I think that's what it is.
Is there anything about being held to account?
In that?
Yeah.
I think when you reach that point, you have held yourself to account. You have gone through that difficult doorway of acknowledging your imperfections, your karma, the circumstances of your life. That's where we start.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Kiyoshi, by the way.
This is Kiyoshi.
Hi, it's Reju. I cry about the earth witness too. Last year when I was practicing elsewhere, I got to a point where it was really quite difficult for me to stay. And the wall where I was sitting faced this enormous green Tara Tonka that was sort of like Americanized rather than Tibetanized. And I would just gaze at it and ask for help constantly the whole time I was there. And I also had an early morning practice before everyone met in the Zendo. I would walk from my room over to this other sitting place. And the whole time, everything I passed, the rocks, the trees, the sky, the mountains, I would just say, please help me, please help me, please help me. Everything I passed. And it was, I'm glad for that experience, because like I was far from home and far from familiarity, and it was really tough for a while, and that like felt really connecting. I feel really connected to that place in a way that I wouldn't have had I not just been constantly asking for help.
Thank you for sharing that. Katagiri says that the spirit of Kanzeon, the truth of compassion, is please. That you call, when you call on Kanzeon, you are saying please. Yeah.
This is Roka. Thank you, Chico. what comes to mind is with effort is faith. And I, through rough things in life, I just return. There's faith and so much support here. I'm not doing it alone. If you could say anything more about faith.
Faith is such an interesting word in Zen, because it's faith in what? Bowing to what? Calling on what, you know? Faith in Zen is that you see that it's possible. You see others have something you want. You see that peace and happiness is possible. You believe somehow this is possible. That's really what Buddhist faith is I don't know how and I don't know when, but I believe it is possible. Now, we do reach walls where we don't believe that anymore. And that's when Jiriki steps in and says, keep going anyway. Keep showing up even when you don't believe it anymore. Because I don't think you can skip that part, honestly. It's kind of like what Reju said. Saying, help me, is a way of saying, I don't believe it anymore, but I'm going to keep going. I see lots of hands. In the corner.
Hi, this is Dio. I was just thinking about that, and also what Gyoshi said about holding to account. That's just like kind of rattling a little bit. And I'm thinking about this, how it relates to like mental health and depression stuff. Like sometimes I am like deeper in depression and sometimes I'm lesser in depression. I'm usually in depression of some kind. But like sometimes I feel that I can generate this like tariki self-power and get myself up and do things and engage with things. And often like I can't and I don't have it anymore. And in those situations, I am kind of relying on like patterns I've established when I had energy and community to know and expect me to do certain things. And I think if I didn't have it, like if I didn't have a community to expect me to be here, and then I start to like fall into a depressive slump, like I just close the door to my room and like no one sees me for a couple months. And like that's not good for me. So like the walking around the temple like a zombie doing some chores even though I want to be asleep, like I think that's really good for me, and that's my that's my experience of Jiriki.
Yeah, no, thank it's you. It's why I'm here today. Because I looked at the clock and thought, time to go, and I just had to go, you know, even though yeah, I think that's exactly it. And depression is a kind of chronic pain, and you find ways to adapt your life, and discipline is very, very helpful. It doesn't always feel good. Yeah. So we seem to be favoring this side of the room. So, well, I see two more hands on this side.
Thank you for your talk. This is Nancy. I'm trying to put this kind of analogy together. Okay, so I'm feeling kind of apart from the practice, and I'm kind of like attracted to what else is out there. I'm looking around. It's like, I'm getting curious about some other form. How is that, or can you compare when the Buddha was practicing and he was doing the earth practice and Mara showed up trying to jack him around? Like that was, Buddha was trying to get distracted and here he was. And yet when I'm feeling like, do I really need to be here? Shouldn't I go check something else out? Can you talk about that?
Go try some other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I encourage you to go try some other practices. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in this room who have other practices. That's fine. Just know what the impulse is. I think that my advice would be, what is the real impulse? Is it an escape hatch from something that's arising in this practice? Or is it a genuine desire to expand this practice?
By expansion, do you mean going to check something else out?
Yeah, I mean, you can try some other things to add some spaciousness in Zazen. Body practices, devotional practices, they can access something. And then you bring that back to your sitting practice. Or you discover that that's really your practice. That's what you really want to do. A lot of trails lead to the top of the mountain. This is one. This is the best one for me.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's the only trail to the top.
It feels a little scary, though, when I'm confused. It's like, why am I here? And I don't know if I want to go look at something else, because it takes a lot of energy.
Well, and that's understanding the impulse. It gets really scary to do Zazen practice sometimes. It gets very dry sometimes. It's boring sometimes. And it can be just genuinely frightening sometimes. When we realize that we're losing our defense mechanisms, we're starting to be pretty vulnerable, there is a real urge to run away.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Thanks for being patient. That was the first hand up.
Thank you. This is Zheng Kong. I was listening to you this morning, and you were saying, you know, why didn't you just breathe? And I was actually mixing with everybody in the hall here today, and I realized that it was wonderful. I got the precept of breathing. It was great. Deep breathing, release, power within, power without. Joy and peace. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for your talk today, because everything just suddenly awakened. Thank you.
Oh, my job here is done. Okay. There have been times in my practice when that a single word made the difference to me. When just a pat on the shoulder made the difference. Yeah. Anybody over here? We got Jiriki, we got Tariki. Okay. A couple more questions, and then we'll finish.
Hi, I'm Kendra. I have a simple question that maybe has a complex answer, but we're new to this space, coming into the space and meditating. And I would love, you mentioned a couple times about what are we bowing to? Who are we bowing to? Why are we bowing? Can you talk a bit about the bowing and?
Bowing. I've done whole talks just on bowing. Bowing is a great practice, and it is not to anything. It is an expression of humility, of surrender, and acceptance. It's really saying, I am here now. I accept this moment, this place, and I'm not in charge. I'm not, you know, there's a kind of bow, a humble bow, where you just are totally folded up. And we're doing a form of that. So it's really giving up the self power for a moment and accepting. When we bow, we raise our hands. And this is supposedly the Buddha is standing on my feet, and I'm lifting the Buddha up. When we put our vestments on in the morning, we put them on our head first, because we're saying the precepts are greater than the ego. Does this make sense? It's not that complicated. One more. Let's do one more.
Hi, my name's Mess. I am curious about, you know, they're the same, but we're kind of talking about self and other in the talk. And like, when sometimes I feel like I defer to others for wisdom, and actually what my practice needs to be like trusting my own wisdom. Any thoughts or practices helpful to discern?
Well, I think you know how to do that. There's a habit. We often have a habit of trying to be affirmed by others, handing our power, our personal power, over to others. Some people have a habit of never accepting others' powers. We tend to lean on one or the other. So finding a balance, just practice that. Practice trusting the self. It will come.
Thank you.
There's nothing outside yourself that you can't reach inside. We still need each other. Okay.